Gallery, December 11th.
We're really more saying that is that this is one of the things we're seeking. But
I see.
In the last year and a half,
right,
which has been a very important.
I can tell you about that. Yeah.
And you know what has happened, and you've read enough to also right. put it in some perspective.
Right.
And
okay.
The shift into almost.
Okay. Well, ask me specific questions about what you want, so I don't run all over the place.
How do you analyze the Senate race in 1972? And also what you've heard.
Well, my view of it is that it's... It's a special case of, quote, the right person in the right place at the right time. By right, I mean the pun and all. Okay, and I think the politicians around, the ones that I've talked to, even the Republicans, consider it a case of their party, Republican Party, putting up a guy who had a particular attraction to a region, the East, that their party had never done well in, and that they overcame that simply because Jesse Helms, first off, had built-in exposure there, and Jesse's people will tell you that they went into rural counties and, in effect, exploited his having been on the air. You know, the word of mouth and the way they campaigned was to accentuate that this is the guy that you've been seeing on television or that you've been hearing over the tobacco network, the TN, whatever they call it, out there. And he was just a person, and I think he won because he did well in the East, and I think it was a case of his ultra conservatism, his seeming to speak the frustrations of the people out there. It just carried it, and I don't think there's any grand strategy about it or anything. You know, you can point to particular things like his McGovern Galifianakis ads, where he wrote them as one word, and that kind of stuff. You know, helped a little, and I suppose the Nixon visit helped a little bit. Nixon.
How were those ads? I mean,
pardon?
Because the McGovern Galifianakis, just one word.
Yeah, he wrote them as one word. McGovern Galifianakis. It was all just shoved together.
How much of his appeal is based on race?
It's my view, almost all of it. But that's a biased view there. I think that the racial issue had a lot to do with it.
Down at rock bottom.
Yeah, I think that deep down, if you really get down to it, Jesse Helms was going to take the cheats off welfare, and he's going to get the federal government out of our business, and he's going to stop busing, and he's going to return things to local control and all that kind of stuff. And I just think deep down he was, that's it. Now, you know, he talked about foreign affairs, he talked about his relationship to Nixon, He talked about a lot of that, okay? But I think deep down, his race symbolized and his winning was a symbol of the racial issue still having an appeal in the South. And I think other races, you know, show that people can overcome that by running a good campaign or by going to certain issues. But I think Jesse Helms, I think the race issue there was a very heavy factor.
Well, then it's still a special case. I mean, he won on the basis of racial.
I think he's a special case in terms of the way. He's a special case in that he won as a Republican. Okay, I think Jesse Helms could have won in the other party. Okay. I say a special case because he's the first senator elected in 72 years as a Republican. Okay, and I think that the reason that he won that was by being a special case as a Republican. You understand what I mean? Okay, but
you think the racial politics would have been enough in either case, either as a Democrat or a Republican, to have won it?
It's my guess, yes. It's totally a guess.
That's assuming totally one, a guess. Assuming one could have gotten a Democratic nominee on that.
Right.
How big a factor was
totally it? A guess. Wallace won primary. And all that. I think he was appealing to the same people. I haven't looked at each precinct that he won and Wallace won. I guess I could spend a few days doing that. But that'd be something for you to look into, where his vote was and where Wallace's vote was. He probably could have won a Democrat, given his exposure and everything else.
So that would suggest to you that the Democratic Party in 74, with any kind of candidate, is going to win it back. Not be another special case of the Republican elected as a senator in the state.
Yeah, except the Republicans keep telling me they can win with somebody like myself. I don't think they can. I think if the Democrats run a smart race, they can be.
How big a factor was the?
I haven't seen any of their polls. Okay, but their polls say that Mizell is close enough to Irvin that they can be. They feel that Mizell can pull the East too. Not so much on a racial issue, though. I'm sure that would have something to do with it there too. I'm sure he could make a racial.
They see him as a Jesse Helms.
Not exactly a Jesse Helms, but close enough to it. I could see Mizell running a campaign. I could work well with Jesse. And I could see him going out east and telling his baseball stories and saying, "I'm one of you." And I think the undercurrent of race could be there too. I mean, I don't see the Republican Party making a poor man's economic campaign out in the east. I just don't see him doing that. My view, people that I talk to don't talk about it in the blatant terms that I'm talking about it. But I think all the code words and the undertones are there. Yeah.
So getting back to what Keith said, is overall about the South, about race being the basic factor in elections. Do you think that's changed substantially?
South as a whole, I suppose it's in the process of changing. I don't think it's been left out yet.
Because in North Carolina, he said it was different. North Carolina was more progressive, and North Carolina race wasn't that much of an issue. And North Carolina was a great progressive state. Do you think that still holds? And you have some advantage of looking at
that. From what I've been able to tell, I think North Carolina's progressive image is more outside the state than inside the state. North Carolina's image increases the further you get away from it.
In other words, you're saying North Carolina's not that really different.
I found a lot of stuff here that I didn't expect. The low wages. I'm totally unprepared for the low wages that they pay here. Textile industry and all that. As much as I've read about it, I was just totally unprepared for that, to be honest with you. I'd been led to expect, and I suppose it's true if you compare it to a lot of things, that North Carolina state government is progressive, moving forward and everything. But and I suppose Sanford and Bob Scott and Carr Scott were progressive men. And within Republicans, Jim Holzhauser, I think, is a fairly progressive guy. But I think the government as a whole, and especially in the General Assembly, and you got to focus on it a little bit, too, because what it says becomes law, no matter what the governor says about it, because he doesn't have a veto power, and he can't succeed himself. So there's no way to test by the voter, all that kind of, you know, those kind of things, what the governor proposes, other than by the General Assembly. In this state, the governor comes today at the beginning of the session, he makes a speech, and then he can you know, pull and tug, he can trade jobs, or try to convince people one way or the other. But when it comes down to it, the power is in the General Assembly, because it passes a law, and when the speaker or the lieutenant governor as presiding officer of the Senate says, I order this bill enrolled, it becomes law. You know, doesn't make any difference what the governor said or anything else. As soon as they do that, it is law. And my experience with the legislature now runs about a year, and I don't find a whole heck of a lot of vision in there. You know, there are some good people in there, some good young people. Legislature much more conservative than the progressive image of the state would lead you to expect. Their rhetoric notwithstanding, because they, you know, I find the state, I you know, Key talks about it, you know, about how it's oriented to businessmen and all that kind of stuff. How the business sort of ethic has kind of kept it honest, but at the same time, the government has always protected the business interests of the state. Well, I find it sort of works another way, too, in my experience. They're always worried about the bond market and about whether we can sell our bonds or about whether we stay with. The budget has to be balanced, but how they estimate tax collections very conservatively, how they're very careful to balance all this. And you get all this talk about can we live within our means, or can we afford to float this bond issue, or do we have we have a AAA bond rating and all that. And there's no connection between all that talk and the fact that about half the blacks, according to this study I was just looking at, in the state live in substandard housing. About 400,000 families in this state, substandard housing. You don't get any relationship to this conservative financial thing and how that affects whether you're paying teachers enough or whether mental health care here is adequate or not. They always worried first about the bond market, about conservative financial estimates and all that. Instead of, in my view, they ought to switch it around. They ought to see what people need first and then work that out, you know, so that they set up a housing corporation, let's take that for example, 4 years ago, and they didn't put the faith and credit of the state behind the bonds or anything. They made the bonds. They backed the bonds with the mortgages they sold. Big deal. That's no power to go out there and solve problems. It was a very conservative, sound financial thing. So how much housing did they provide? $250,000 worth of loans. That's all. Nothing. Practically nothing. So that's how I see the General Assembly. You know, it's a very limited sort of group of people, because they don't take a big vision of things. They just see what they can work out, what they can get by with. They don't have a good staff. Lobbyists there have great power, not because they buy and sell people, not because they buy and sell, but just because they're the only people there with information, and the regular folks in the state just don't have any voice up there, don't have any ongoing way to get their views and needs known.
What are the most powerful lobbies in the state?
I think the banks are undoubtedly very powerful. Senator Gordon Allen said the other day that in the 73 session there was a bill to put collision coverage in a plan to shift from the, what do they call it, the assigned risk plan to what they call a facility plan. It was a distinction between way to handle high-risk drivers. The details are unimportant. Well, anyway, the banks oppose putting collision under the thing because the banks run a lot of these little side firms that handle collision coverage. Well, anyway, Senator Gordon Allen said that over one weekend from Friday when the session was over to Monday night, when there's 39 votes out of 50 the banks had lined up in the Senate, just cut it out. That's not bad.
Who would be number two?
Well, I don't know if the banks are number one, but they're pretty high up there. Number two, I don't know. Textile people keep a low profile, but the state takes care of them as much as it can, you know.
How about tobacco people?
I don't know. In my experience, they haven't been powering it all. Bob Scott got the tobacco tax through, and the legislature has withstood pressure to take it off. That's the only thing in my experience. They obviously are not going to do anything to endanger the tobacco interests, you know, and they all run around with those little tobacco leaves on their ties, you know, saying, I support cancer, and all that kind of stuff. But they aren't going to do any of that. Textiles, you might check. You remember when I was telling you about Holt's House or meeting with those Southern chairmen when they went up Washington, when Clark Reed went up there? He said, told me in the interview that I had with him the other day that was one of the main things that he was involved in. It was ensuring that federal policy took care of the tobacco growers, the textiles, you know, the import fight they had in the early days of the
I presume electric utilities are a powerful lobby.
Yeah,
insurance,
and insurance utilities, yeah.
And insurance up in there with them. Insurance industry.
No, the insurance industry, I wouldn't say yet. The insurance industry is sort of mixed. The attorneys there have been able to fight the insurance people off. The insurance people have been the ones supporting the no-fault insurance thing. But they haven't gotten it passed. And if they were as powerful as the banks or as the utilities, certainly would have gotten it passed. I don't see a lot of activity in the utilities in the General Assembly, but I think it's clear that the utilities have a lot of force in other agencies of state.
Who are the real powers in the legislature?
Very few real leaders.
In
my judgment,
if I were a guy or representative of special interests and really had some legislation I wanted to get through, who would I go see?
Jim Ramsey, you'd go see first, the Speaker of the House.
Where is he from?
Roxboro, Person County. He's got ambitions, I guess, to run statewide in 76, probably for governor. Ramsey is undoubtedly an important man. In the House.
What's the source of his power? I mean, as Speaker, he's able to do what? He appoints committees.
Yeah, he appoints the committees and names the chairman. And names the chairman.
Good bit of power.
The speaker, too, as I understand it, has traditionally been sort of the leader, too. You know, the caucus leader. When the Democrats have a caucus, the majority leader, named William Watkins from Granville County, presides over the meetings. But everybody knows that Watkins is Ramsey's man, you know, and they work very close together. And it's pretty clear that Ramsey's the central man there. So that he has sort of an intangible power, you know, to set the agenda to what's going to be discussed. This tax reduction package that they voted the other day, Friday, Ramsey was the one behind that. I think it's fairly clear about that.
Can I ask you a little bit about Holzhauser?
Yeah. Let me just name a few other important people. Ramsey is pretty important. Liston Ramsey, he's sort of middle important. He's from the mountains. He's the chairman of the Finance Committee.
In the House?
Yeah, of the House.
How about in the Senate?
The Senate, Gordon Allen is important. He's the majority leader.
He's more important than the finance chairman?
In a way, yeah. Yeah.
Where's he from?
He's from Person County, too. Ralph Scott in the Senate is a fairly important guy. He's not going to... I'm not sure that the special interest people are going to go get him too often because he's a very independent guy, but he's chairman of the Appropriations Committee and a very shrewd political sort within the Assembly. So I would say I'll talk about Jim Hunt later because he's a special case. You want to know about Holt's House?
Yeah.
Let me put it this way. First Republican governor went 74 years.
Right.
What's happened in other southern states is that when a Republican governor does get elected, that there's a certain period of reform that occurs. Looking back over this year, has the Republican administration been able to make as much reform as you think it should have?
No.
B, would it have done? Would the situation been any different with the Democrat or Republican? In other words, I'm trying to get, and it seems to me that in the first year that this guy's in office, he makes his major moves. From now on, in terms of the legislature, it's got to be downhill, or at least it's got to be coasting. I may be wrong on that.
You better give him another year before. Well, I'll explain that.
Did we have the kind of social change that you thought we were going to have, and then I think the people of the state thought they were going to have?
Not the kind that I would have wanted. Okay. Whether it's what I thought we were going to have, I don't know. Well, let me start. Give me question A again that I answered no to immediately.
Did you have the kind of change in this year that you thought they were going to have?
That I thought they were going to have? Political change, yes. Social change, no. You know, I knew it was going to shake things up a little bit. Yeah. You know, I mean, I think that was clear from the beginning that he was going to...
What about the direction of state policy and education and mental health and roads and so on?
I don't see it going too many places different yet. You know, he's proposed a new roads plan. We've got to see how it works out. Let me just go back to square one and kind of launch out about him. I don't know if it would have been much different with Skipper, okay? Obviously, Skipper had some stuff in education that he would have liked to have done that Holzhauser is certainly not going to do. Whether Craig Phillips can do it or not is another thing. Now, it's obvious that Skipper would have allowed Craig Phillips to do it or would have sought the authority for Craig Phillips to do it. And he may not, Skipper may not have won everything that he wanted to, but he would have made the effort and the issue would have come out in the public discussion much more forcefully. These folks in the editorial department here would have still fought it, you know. But I think Skipper would have accomplished some of it, if not all of it. There was a lot of money last time. Well, it still is a lot of money, you know. And the legislature was in the mood to spend a lot of money for education, as they proved. But I think if the Democrat would have been elected, you would have seen the spending on a different priority scale within the education budget. Okay. I think if a Democrat would have been elected, you obviously wouldn't have had the political the seeming political turmoil that at least appears to be enveloping the state right now. I think a lot of the fights would have been on the issues themselves, as opposed to on whether he's a Republican, of course, and all that kind of stuff. Where do I want to go from here? Okay, so I think Bowles would have. There would have been a different tone to the government under Bowles, but I don't think it would have been the same tone as Bob Scott, but it would have been different from what Holzhauser has made it. Okay. Now, Holzhauser, in my columns and everything, I've probably been fairly kind to him. From this perspective, if you're going to have a Republican, you might as well have one like him. I sense a sort of a tension within the Republican Party in the state. Nobody admits to it, but it's sort of a tension between the bedrock Republicans. Holzhauser from the mountains, you know, came up through, you know, his father was a Republican and his grandfather was, I suppose, grandfather before that. Okay, so you got that sort of old-time, traditional Republican, okay? And then you got the suburban Republicans who can sort of who may split between the two camps that I'm getting ready to describe. And then you've got the disenchanted Democrat types that Frank Rouse talked about, and that Frank Rouse particularly wanted to attract to the party. Okay, I think the suburbanites sometimes split between these two camps. There's some suburbanites, you know, types, and some suburbanites feel themselves more the traditional Republican types. Many of them have moved here from the north. I don't have any numbers on that. Anyway, I sort of sense a tension within the party over whether the party is going to be a party of Democrats who don't like what the Democratic Party has to offer, and who have come to the Republican Party because they feel the Republican Party is more in line with their... Well, frankly, I think they come to the Republican Party because they feel the Republican Party will maintain the status quo, the social status quo, as opposed to a political status quo. Holzhauser, on the other hand, sort of the way he's acted, let's put it that way, leads me to believe that he sees the way to build a party is by running a fairly decent state government, one that, you know, that keeps things in order, that doesn't cause a lot of trouble, that keeps away from as much scandal as it can, that dispenses the goodies around, you know, mental health gets its share, parks gets its share, the ports gets its share, the teachers get their share, you know, that sort of runs a fairly clean ship. He gets business folks together and they run an efficiency study, and he's out there four square for efficiency, and he'll put into effect some of the things that's in the report, and he'll be very honest about supporting the board of governors in a fight, even though it might lose him a little bit of support in the East, but he's in favor of that type of government organization, good government, have a board, set the priorities and all that. Okay, Frank Rouse would ask, who else can we get party leader, build up the party from, if it's not getting Democrats to switch over? Well, he might be right, but there's a way of approaching that problem, that quest, that I see as different. So on the one hand, you've got the Jesse Helms approach, though I don't think Jesse is really interested in building the party and all that, very much an ideological type, and is not really all involved in party affairs. And you got the Holzhauser type, who so the people of the Helms wing, let's say.
Would that really be the Rouse wing?
Well, yeah. I don't think you can consider Rouse a leader of it now. I think he's been beaten, you know.
What about Gardner?
I don't see a whole lot of Gardner stuff right now. Gardner sort of slipped out. In fact, I was getting kind of worried during the campaign, you know, the Rouse Bennett campaign, that we kept writing in our stories, Frank Rouse supported Gardner last time, et cetera, you know, as though that were the cause of the problem now. But I've sort of seen Gardner sort of out of it now. Not a whole heck of a lot of Gardner activity.
Do you see those tensions increasing or abating between the two wings of the party? You think now that the fight for the chairmanship is over, that that tension is slowly going to dissipate?
I'm not sure, to be honest with you. I'm not sure. I don't know. It's one of the things why I haven't written this Sunday's column yet, because I haven't figured it out. I was at the meeting with Jack over the weekend, and I found the trends there very much to the Frank Rouse, just Jesse Helms type, you know, get the Democrats over here, tell them we're going to treat the South just like the rest of the nation, and all the code words. And I didn't see Holzhauser or Bennett really taking part in that type of stuff. Okay? I didn't see Holzhauser making those kind of remarks to people and all that kind of stuff. In fact, I rode back with him from the airport, and he made a couple little remarks on the side that indicated to me he wasn't really pleased with the way some of the speeches went. Not necessarily with the big names, but some of the congressional people and all that that were up there. Wasn't quite at home with that. Okay.
But so, are you saying that there's more of that in the South than the Holzhauser types?
From my experience, yeah. Now, the only problem is, you see, what I haven't sorted out, Walter, is whether, okay, Holzhauser won the fight within the party simply because he's the governor, okay?
Right.
Only reason, he's the governor. Now, the implications of his winning go much further, okay? But that's why people voted for Bennett, because the governor was there. And you just can't buck him, you know. And all this stuff that the newspapers had about them arm twisting and all that, that didn't make a bit of difference. All I had to do was pick up the phone and to a county, I'm Jim Holzhauser, and I'd like your support. That's all it took. That's arm twisting, you know. They just couldn't beat the governor. You know, it's their first one. And it was too much of a risk for them to take, you know, to beat him within his own party. Okay. So the reason that I don't know which way the Republican Party in North Carolina is going to drift is this. I saw the rest of the southern states more on the Rouse, Jesse Helms side. Okay? And I saw Holzhauser not necessarily a part of that. Okay. Now, I don't know which pressure is going to be the more prevailing yet. Whether the pressure from national Republican sources, whether the pressure from other southern states and all that kind of stuff is going to spill over into North Carolina, or whether Holzhauser within the state is going to be able to hold the party, you know, to his, you know, his sort of image. Holzhauser described to me in an interview the other day that I did with him. I'm working on an article, you know, about the Republican Party in the South for Southern Voices. And I interviewed Holzhauser the other day in connection with the article. And I haven't transcribed my tape yet, but if I remember what he said correctly, he says his image of the party is to have a fairly moderate party with conservative coalitions. That's his view, to have a basic moderate party and to have coalitions with conservative elements. That's the Republican Party in his view.
Is that the way he sees it going? That is his idea of what it ought to be.
That's his idea.
But we put it in the historical context. Okay, now, is that where it's going?
Let me explain. From what I saw in Atlanta over the weekend, in my prior experience, I see the Republican Party in the South as more of a conservative drift with a few moderate coalitions. Okay? And I think there's a distinction there. I hope I've made myself clear. All this is probably junk after you get through with it. But because my experience is so limited in all this. You know, this is the first time I've ever lived in a state with a Republican. So I don't know which sort of drift is going to prevail yet. You see?
You use the word drift. Do you really mean that? I mean, don't you see him actively taking the role as party leader in North Carolina? And indeed enlarging that to the other southern states, and indeed even beyond that to some of our wilder moments of the entire country?
Philosophically speaking, I would like to see him do that. I don't know if he will or not. I think he's becoming more visible. And I don't see him yielding to conservative pressures within his own party. Just the other day, he said that he wouldn't favor cutting taxes or anything else like that. He's going to come with a program that's going to increase spending and education and mental health and parks and a bunch of other things. And he's going to go for this $25 to $30 million rural health, area health, education center thing. So I see it's hard to judge his impact because he keeps a very low profile. He doesn't talk philosophical terms and all that kind of stuff. And I find him very pragmatic. I don't find him a pusher and a shover. You know, people told me that Bob Scott, the way he would work, was he'd propose something big, you know, and really put the issue in front of people. You know, and say, look, we've got a massive problem here, and we got to really get out there and attack it. Holzhauser doesn't work that way. He goes to all these little committee meetings, and he gets a little piece in here, and then he goes to another committee meeting, and he gets a little piece in there. And his public speeches tend to be very dry and bland, and just sort of keep things calm and smooth and assure people that we're getting there. And so I don't know if he's going to be effective. his style is very much of, well, let's work together, let's see what we can do over here, let's see what we can do over there. Maybe he's adopted that because he's in a minority position. Maybe he feels that he's got to do
it. But is he doing what you think has to be done to build a party in this state? I mean, is he bringing people to the fore of prominence? Is he building potential leaders, run for office, and so on? But do you see that kind of an active effort in the party?
Just beginning.
What, they had to get this other thing behind them first?
Yeah, just beginning. I don't know whether he would have begun to do it before the fight, okay? But I just see the beginnings of it now. You know, the fact that he selected Bennett was sort of one thing. You know, he reached down and pulled out a bright young man, you know, and put him up there. And I've seen some evidence that if not the governor himself, but his people are going to be involved in recruiting candidates to run for Congress, General Assembly, and that kind of stuff. But he's also pragmatic.
And you see him picking moderate types, people with his philosophy in so far as building that sort of a party. Is it too early to tell?
I'm not sure yet. I'll tell you, the first time I heard Mizell's name mentioned, I think the first time I heard it, was from a Holzhauser type. Holzhauser guy. Who suggested him as a real possibility. And I don't know what that means. Whether they're just thinking pragmatically to get the votes out or whatever.